Side 9. Man of Two Worlds by Frank Herbert and Brian Herbert. Continuing on page 344. As Lutt stared into the cage, the figure of the captive melted into a mound of pulsing protoplasm and reshaped into a squat figure with four legs, a bulbous head with pendulous ear flaps and glaring pink eyes. The horn tool extrusion on the face lifted to reveal a wide mouth. "A very poor job of imaging, but adequate," Ryle informed him. "I could do it much better. By the blessed snout of Habiba, that's a female Dreen."
Denny Ra's mouth opened, and a familiar gruff voice emerged.
"Now you know, Pilgrim. You've been dealing from the bottom of the deck. Time to pay up."
Lutt continued to examine the odd figure. The Dreen looked much as Ryle had described himself, and Lutt could not see anything to distinguish Denny Ra's sex. Because Phoenicia was present, Lutt decided to put Ryle's inside information in the form of a question.
"Are you male or female?" Lutt asked.
"Don't make no difference, Pilgrim. You are outgunned."
The heavy Western accent coming from the Dreen suddenly struck Lutt as ridiculous. He grinned.
"You don't look very dangerous to me, Denny Ra. I mean, there you are, a captive in our cage. Your threats are kind of laughable."
"You'll stop laughing when our top gun arrives. Why should we believe you?"
"Zone Patrol can tell you that, Pilgrim. They lost some of their top hands trying to pry into one of our ships."
"Ask her if they have made a new erasure ship," Ryle intruded.
"Have you made a new ship to attack us?" Lutt asked.
"Yep. Old Habiba herself, give the order."
Phoenicia moved up beside Lutt. "Have you seen and heard enough, Lutt? Isn't it an ugly thing?"
"Actually, it's kind of ridiculous," Lutt said. "Look at those stupid arms and those funny hands."
"You better be careful," Denny Ra said. "I'll take just so much of your poison before I come out there and pound a little sense into you."
Lutt began to chuckle.
"Look at it, Mother. This thing will get laughs. Nothing else."
"Don't provoke her, Lutt," Ryle warned. "This is an adult Dreen. Very dangerous."
"Reckon I'll have to show you," Denny Ra said mournfully.
Once more she melted into a mound of protoplasm, but when she reformed, it was into a glistening green and black cobra. The head lifted and poised itself level with Lutt's eyes. The snake mouth opened, and again the gruff voice emerged.
"You think this year Huskow'll hold me if an hour wants out?"
Phoenicia backstepped to the wall, but Lutt held his ground.
"Lutt, be careful," Phoenicia said.
"You'd be blasted to bits before you got 2 centimeters out of that cage," he said.
"And I'd just reform myself,"
the snake said.
"You'd run out of ammo, for I'd run out of bodies."
"Then why are you still a captive?" Lutt demanded.
"Someone's gotta tell you, Nestors, your fences are a-comin' down," Denny Ra said.
"82nd Amendment to the U.S. Constitution abolishes the Vice Presidency, creates an elective chairman of the Senate, and installs the runner-up candidate as chief executive should incumbent die of natural causes. The amendment's so-called assassination barrier provides for an election should an incumbent die by violence, thus removing a motive for the loser to kill the winner. It was argued that the vice president was a ceremonial figure, and the office attracted few candidates of high caliber. A History of the United States and Its Colonies. Sidman Sons, Publishers, New York and Jupiter.
"Darcy, what's your interest in all of this?"
Raj Dude demanded.
"You're worse than I am when it comes to Hansons."
He and Osceola lay stretched out on string hammocks in the mangrove shade of Osceola's swampside porch at Gum City, Florida, wasting away a hot afternoon.
The house behind them was mostly weathered boards with gaping cracks between them, and the post and pole porch looked as though it would blow away in a strong wind. There had been an alert earlier when a tropical depression out in the Atlantic turned into a storm, but the disturbance was drifting northward toward the Carolina coast.
"Oh, you know how it is, dude," she said. "Sometimes I toy with the idea of moving in on their holdings and leaving them squeezed dry like a dead lizard too long in the sun."
"Damn it, Ossie, you'd be just as bad as them. Why the hell do you think I quit old L.H. like that?"
"You're right, dude. But daydreams are kind of fun."
"That's true, all right. Wonder what's happening to that storm. I was hoping it'd hit us and blow this shack away. You got anything valuable in there?"
"My spirit glass collection, but we can replace that easy enough." "You're acting kind of restless. What's fermenting in that head of yours?"
"I was thinking I might like to bring in one of those dream pets, those little yellow soothers that talk straight into your mind."
She sat up and swung her legs over the edge of the hammock.
"You're cooking up something, you old bastard."
He grinned up at the porch ceiling where a spider was spinning its web between two pole rafters.
"Well, there's Nishi off there all alone with—"
"She's not alone," Osceola said. "But who can she trust? Not that Mrs. Abey. That one would do in her own mother for profit. She's not spying for the Hansons, though. Because they haven't offered to hire her. Not likely they will. Her off there in a med with Nishi and those legionnaires," Osceola said.
"Nishi's doing all right," Raj Dude said. "That's why I backed out of negotiations with the Legion. Besides, I kind of like the Chinese. They're not as pushy as the damn French."
Osceola squinted.
"But she's like a royal prisoner."
"That's her strength, Ossie. The Legion wants Lutz communicator, and she's their key."
"If only she weren't halfway in love," Osceola said.
"Have you thought what might happen if the Zone Patrol learns the Legion's real purpose?"
Osceola pursed her lips.
"You never know about Hansons. They might bring the ZP to the bargaining table."
"Venetia wouldn't hesitate a minute if she saw a chance for profit. She always was a skittish thing, and she's not above doing her own dirty work."
"Look here, dude. You taking a hand in this?"
"Not really. Thought I might toss a monkey wrench into the works now and then. But you know how it is. Weather's too hot for doing much else but think."
"You think too much."
"Maybe so. But I've been thinking about dreams, too. This thing could get out of hand, Ossie. Dreams are idiot savants. Don't know what they're doing half the time. Only image in three dimensions. And that one squatting in Lutz's body is just a kid.
Pretty smart kid, you ask me.
Seems to be learning. But what are you going to get with Lutz and his tribe as teachers?"
"I see what you mean. We better keep an eye on this and see if we can balance things should the need occur." "You're a mother hen, Ossie. And you're my main rooster, you old bastard. Sometimes I wonder what would have happened if the wrong person had made your discovery."
"L.H. would have been dictator of the universe, at least. He went pretty far on his power trip with the little he was able to pick up from my notes. Look at what he did with it. That damn listening post."
"Strikes me as odd the Dreens haven't had that problem,"
Osceola said.
"It's not their nature."
"I wish we could sneak on to their home ground and study them," she said.
"They'd know they were being spied on, and that'd be like pouring gas on an anthill. We can't risk it."
"I'd still like to meet that Habiba,"
Osceola said.
"Every dream we've seen seems to think she's God." Tax collectors always think they're God. Now leave me be for a bit. I want to conjure up one of those furry yellow things.
Politics has never been a science. It is an art form. Only those who are not gifted with imagination can think of politics as a science, and their laws always break down when the need for creativity arises. In fact, this is the friction point between all science and all creativity. The Art of Politics by Cilla Mill, Seminole Publications. Senator Gilberton Woon arrived an hour late for his conference with Lutt, entering Lutt's office at the Inquirer 10 minutes before noon, with a brisk but harried air. Having been warned by his staff researchers, Lutt sat at his desk eating a lunch of canard à l'orange and fresh haricots. One of Woon's standard ploys, the researchers said, was to arrive this way and prolong the conversation to keep his host hungry, Woon having eaten a full meal just before the meeting. The senator, a gray-maned, rotund figure with hard little pig eyes and fat cheeks, burped gently at sight of Lutt's lunch, then,
"I did not know this was to be a luncheon meeting."
His voice was deep and mellifluous. Lutt waved to a chair on the other side of the desk and waited until Woon was seated.
"It's not a luncheon meeting. I hope you enjoyed your meal at Rossellini's. Their pheasant is particularly good." "Are you having me spied on, son?" Woon asked. "A famous man such as yourself is always recognized, sir, wherever he goes," Lutt said.
He pushed the remains of his lunch aside and waited for a copy boy to remove it. When the door closed and only the two of them remained in the office, Lutt said,
"Let's stop playing games. We've an election to win."
Woon folded his hands over his ample stomach.
"And what would you say is our most immediate problem there, son?"
"Number one, you stop calling me son. I'm Lutt Hansen, candidate for president. Number two, how to deal with Phoenicia. She could be a real problem if we don't put a lid on her."
"Well, well, Mr. Hansen. Your mother told me you were a very sharp character. Glad to see she was right."
"Know what she's doing right now?" Lutt asked.
"She said she had important business to attend to and could not be at this conference."
"She and my brother are setting up new corporate headquarters for the family's holdings."
"Oh? She told me they'll make a shrine out of LH's old offices. That right?"
"That will look good in print," Lutt said.
"Anything I should know about this? Anything that might backfire?"
"I'll tell you on a need-to-know basis," Lutt said. "Now, there's one thing I need to know. How far did you get in your plan to have me murdered on Venus?"
Woon's little eyes blinked hard. He paled slightly.
"Mr. Hansen, I have to know how you learned about that."
"My father told me."
Lutt smiled gently and embellished his statement with a lie.
"He also told me other things he learned about you."
"Shit in a gumboot," Woon said. "Get one Hansen off my back and another one climbs right up there to take his place."
"So Woon is one of those father manipulated through the listening post," Lutt thought. "All the tales of the plot against me must be up there in the sanctum someplace."
"I just want you to know who's running things here," Lutt said. "My mother was never privy to father's private sources." "That's what he always told me. But he never said a word about you."
"That's part of my inheritance," Lutt said. "Did you see the Hansen guards all over this building when you came in?"
"How could I miss them? They wanted to do a body search on me until I called your mother. She apologized, but said the guards were here at her orders. What's going on?"
"A minor disagreement in the family about who controls what."
"Didn't look very minor to me. Must be 50 guards I had to pass through, and all of them armed to the teeth."
"We'll chalk it up to terrorist threats if the need arises," Lutt said. "You can think of it as a show of strength by my mother. She's demonstrating to me who gives orders to the Hansen guards.
And she controls the purse strings?
I have other sources.
And expensive tastes. What's this project out at your shop?
An invention that will make us plenty.
How soon?
Lutt's desktop communicator buzzed to interrupt his reply. A switchboard attendant said, "Sorry, Mr. Hansen, but it's your mother on line 3. Lutt opened the line.
"Yes, Mother."
Phoenicia's finishing school lilt came through the speaker with only slight clipping. "There was nothing in your father's will about your shop, Lutt. I have put it under special guard to keep it safe." Lutt scowled.
"And to keep me out?"
"Now, son, you and your man, Cand, can go back as soon as you've been briefed on the new security measures."
"So you kicked Sam out too, I see."
"The discoveries at your shop were made on company time with company funds, Lutt. All while you were an employee of Hansen Industries."
Lutt suppressed a surge of anger. His mother was a wily bitch. Never mind what Father's will said, she was going to block him at every turn until she had her way.
"I understand, Mother," he said. "But Father's will says the Inquirer and Spiral News Service are mine. Are you contesting that?"
"Oh, no. But this odd spaceship is something else, is it not?"
"It works on the same principle as the communicators," Lutt said. "What's this about a spaceship?" Woon asked.
"Who's that with you?"
Phoenicia asked. Lutt clicked the telekey and saw his mother's face on the desk screen. She, at the same time, saw the occupants of Lutt's office.
"Oh, it's you, Senator,"
Phoenicia said.
"Yes, you're meeting with Lutt over his campaign."
"Good afternoon, madam," Woon said. "So sorry you could not join us."
"That unctuous tone," Ryle offered.
"Is he wooing your mother?"
"He could be. We'd better watch that."
"I hope you can make my son behave,"
Phoenicia said.
"And, madam, I hope we are not about to have a dramatic battle in court over your son's inheritance. That would be a rather foolish form of political suicide."
Phoenicia put a hand over her mouth. Lutt looked at the senator. Did this mean the wily old politician had chosen to back him? A mixture of fear and political savvy could have dictated such a decision. Time to test it.
"I'm afraid I'd withdraw my candidacy if that happened,"
Lutt said.
"A wise decision," Woon said.
"I will not be blocked in my administration of Hansen Industries," Phoenicia said.
"Minor matters can always be dealt with by compromise," the senator said. "May I offer my services as arbiter?"
"There's no reason for us to oppose each other," she said.
Lutt heard conciliation in her tone. "I do not understand your mother's motives," Ryle intruded.
"She's ambivalent. Motherly pride wants me president. But she also sees me as a pawn in her economic schemes."
"You Earthers are truly weird."
"I'm sure I can work out a satisfactory agreement for all concerned," Woon said. "That's fine with me," Lutt said. "Mother?"
"What is it you really want, son?"
she asked.
"I've always gone my own way. Father understood. It's time you understood. I need some free rein."
"I've already given you considerable free rein. A blank check for your political ambitions, my assurance you..."
"Your political ambitions, Mother."
"Our political ambitions?" she offered.
"If we keep our heads, all of us will profit greatly," Woon said.
"Exactly,"
Phoenicia said.
"You and the senator should discuss this," Lutt said. "But your meetings had better be secret."
"Very well," Phoenicia sighed.
Lutt had heard that sigh before, a tiny victory sign. She gave him a lilting goodbye that only confirmed his suspicion, and she broke the connection. When the screen went blank, Lutt turned a hard stare on Woon. Time to run his bluff.
"Senator,"
Lut said, holding a poker face. At the first sign you're selling me down the river, I'll ruin you. I have all the ammo I need.
Mr. Hansen, I'm your man, just as I was your father's man. You're very much his son, and I can live with that.
Stay away from Maury. He's thin metal in the family's armor, not to be trusted. I know everything he does, and there's nothing he can do to prevent that.
No more than I can, I presume. That's some spy system you have, Mr. Hansen.
The very best. Now, whatever you concede to Mother has to be empty. We run this campaign, you and I, understood?
Understood. What bargaining chips do I have?
She wants me to be president.
She also should fear what I might reveal about Hansen Industries operations. If she makes me go hunting for income, I know where to sell what I know.
Woon pursed his lips and blew out solidly. Then,
she wants you to marry this Spokane socialite, Viola Van Dyke. How do you feel about that?
Lut leaned back.
Marry Iola?
He thought of Nishi off there half the globe away. Not one word from her. Another bitch. His father had been right. Never trust women.
If that's the bargaining chip we need to bring her around, use it, he said. What about LH's old offices in the MX complex? They belong to me, no compromise. She'd remodel the place into something father would never have entered. She seemed pretty upset about something you're doing there, Boone said. I couldn't make out just what it was.
I'm keeping her and my brother out of there. Woon's lips vibrated with a slight humming sound.
And what if she cuts off the purse strings?
We have other resources depend on it. The contributions and contributors might surprise you. Woon heaved his bulk out of the chair.
I thought so.
He looked down at Lut.
You know, Mr. Hansen, you're a lot bigger than I remembered. You still growing?
My accident. I'm sure you've read about it. I was immersed in a chemical that reset my growth hormones.
Nothing to worry about. I'm in great physical shape. I saw your last report from the House of Delights,
Woon said, and he smiled. I'm not the only one with information sources, huh? Lut asked. I'd better make sure that one is plugged.
That's why I told you, Mr. Hansen. And rest easy. Your growth is a good thing. In all the history of United States presidential elections, the tallest man invariably wins.
There is reason to believe your mother may have changed your father's medication without his knowing. I don't know whether you would want to use this, but the case could be made that she hastened his end. Investigators report, eyes only, for L.H. Jr. Nishi, wearing a blue terry cloth robe, paced back and forth in the moon-shadowed darkness of the villa's living room, not knowing what had brought her to this wakeful vigil. She wore no watch, but she knew it must be past midnight. When she passed a window, she could see a brilliant path of silvery moon glow on the sea, and shadows of potted palms along the balustrade, long black witch shapes on the terrazzo of the porch. Lorna Subiyama's snores were a distant rumble, and Nishi could both hear and feel the surf rolling against the rocks below the villa. The floor trembled with an ancient heartbeat.
What do we do now that Lorna's articles have run their course? What do you want to do?
The question lay poised in her awareness, and she wondered at its source. Her mind was playing tricks on her tonight, she thought.
What do I want to do? That is question.
She put a knuckle into her mouth and chewed it. Something stirred in the corner of the room.
One of the housekeeper's cats, Nishi thought. Not cat. Fire thing hurt.
Nishi gasped and stopped pacing to stare at the corner where she had heard the sound.
Abruptly, she strode to the doorway and flicked a light switch. Pale glowing from wall sconces lighted the room, and she saw a furry yellow shape in a corner tangled in the cord from a floor lamp. She could see no head, tail, or paws, but shape and color suggested a cat curled into a protective ball.
Quiet thing, that... There it was. A definite thought projected into her mind.
The creature began struggling against its restraints, and a tuft of fur twisted in a pinched coil of knotted wire.
But...
With instinctive sympathy, Nishi rushed to the corner and loosened the knot, carefully pulling back the wire and freeing the creature. She still saw no head, tail, or paws.
What are you?
She asked, stroking the silky fur.
Dreen, friend.
Dreen? Ryle was Dreen. She recalled Ryle's notes falling from the air to her lap.
They're a gift from Ryle.
Ryle, Ryle, Ryle. Ryle Dreen, Dreen, friend.
Nishi sat on the floor and scooped the furry ball into her lap. It had a slightly musty odor, not unpleasant. A low rumble came from somewhere within it. She felt it breathe deeply, but saw no head, mouth, or feet. The thing felt soft and warm. It pulsated against her hands. The musty odor triggered old memories. She sat caught in her past, her mother's face peering through bars of the crib, then leaning close to kiss her goodnight, tucking a bottle and favorite Donald Duck rubber car into the blankets. Nishi had not thought of the toy car for years. It had been light blue, with Donald Duck in a matching blue sailor suit molded into the driver's seat and much too large for the car.
Whatever happened to that toy?
Not, no. The thing in her lap was talking to her, putting thoughts directly into her mind. She knew it, recognized the alien oddity of the situation, and still could not prevent the upwelling nostalgia that brought tears to her eyes.
I'm crying over a lost toy.
Nishi make many sads.
The thing in her lap was right. The tears were for many things gone from her life and never to return. Friends, father and brothers lost in a war. Her mother, dead less than a year following that awful day when a Legion captain saluted her and delivered our sympathy for your tragic loss. Nishi felt tears roll down her cheeks, dropping onto the furry creature in her lap. She used a corner of her robe to dry the thing's fur, noting thin black streaks in the yellow. It rolled in her hands and positioned the black streaks against her lap, appearing entirely yellow now.
The black streaks are your underside.
Downside, upside, not matter.
What shall I call you?
Nishi like yellow?
Oh, yes. You're my yellow thing.
Yellow thing.
Yellow thing, she thought. Odd name for an odd creature.
She experienced a sudden surge of gratitude toward Ryle.
You must have known I was lonely. Oh, where are you, Ryle? Where has Lot taken you?
She looked down at the creature in her lap and dried her eyes. Foolish to sit here, crying over what could not be changed.
Yellow thing, she thought. Y.T. I will call you Y.T.
Cradling Y.T. in her arms, Nishi returned to her bedroom where she placed her new pet on the bed while she prepared to remove her robe.
Man in window.
It was a sharply intrusive thought. She paused with her robe still on her shoulders and looked at the deep embrasure of her bedroom window. Captain O'Hara sat in the shadows of the window ledge, a cigarette in his mouth, a knowing smile on his face.
Saw your light and thought you might be lonely, he said.
He swiveled on his buttocks and slid off the ledge into the bedroom. She saw he was wearing only a thin white robe. Nishi spoke in her coldest voice.
Get out of here, or I will scream. I'm a virgin, and I intend to stay that way.
He moved toward her, slowly and steadily.
No, I don't think you'll scream. It's time a real man tested your claim to virginity.
Not touch her. Nishi felt the solid impact of Whitey's thought, and O'Hara apparently also experienced it. He stopped short.
Get out of here,
Nishi ordered.
You leave, or her head bad.
It was an ominous warning from Whitey. O'Hara recoiled 2 steps. He glanced at the thing on the bed, then at Nishi.
How are you doing that?
Just leave quietly, or it will go very bad for you,
she said.
Want head hurt?
O'Hara squeezed his eyes tightly closed and pressed both palms against his temples.
Stop that,
he moaned.
Leave, and don't come back unless I invite you,
she said. She pointed to the bedroom doorway. O'Hara opened his eyes and scurried past her out of the bedroom. When the door closed behind him, Nishi sat down beside YT and stroked its yellow fur.
You're more than just a pet,
she said.
Nishi, friend, bad man want lustful breeding, Nishi. Nishi want lustful breeding luck.
I do, but I must not give him that power over me. Not yet.
Her thoughts about Lot became wistful. Would he marry that socialite?
He really needs me. He has no friends except me.
It occurred to her that Lot Hansen Jr. was the most complex man she had ever met, a loner driven by compulsions. He didn't want friends, no time for them. It took energy to maintain friendships. Friends were trouble. Yet he really wanted her, wanted the intimate companionship, the love, the friendship. Could he ever bring himself to the necessary understanding of his own desires? And what influence could Ryle have on the man who shared his flesh? Lot was a man of 2 lives, not only because of Ryle, but also in the ambivalence of his own compulsions. Sleepily, Nishi extinguished the lights and crawled under the blankets. Whitey squirmed close against her neck.
Nishi, sleep. Whitey, not let bad thing come.
It was a comforting thought. She fell asleep while stroking Whitey's silky pelt, and awakened at dawn to feel the warm presence against her cheek, hearing the gentle rumble of its contentment. She stretched and yawned. It had been her most restful sleep since arriving at the villa.
Thank you, Whitey.
Lady, friend, come.
A knock at the bedroom door was followed by Subayama's low voice.
You wake, Nishi?
What is it, Lorna?
Subayama entered, a great mound of pink bathrobe with her hair wound into a red towel turban.
We've struck pay dirt, honey. Message through the Legion for my office. Phoenicia Hansen herself wants to see you.
See me?
A confab, honey. Wanna bet she'll try to buy you off?
Nishi sat up in bed and groped for her robe, slipping it over her shoulders.
She tried that once, and got the answer she deserved.
The bed sagged as Subayama sat on the foot of it.
Sure, honey. But think of this as good copy. Lut's mother tries to buy you off, as seen and reported by yours truly.
I don't think she'll try to buy me off again. It's something different this time, and devious. You can count on it.
One way to find out, honey. Shall I tell your Legion buddies to send her along?
Why not?
Nishi rolled out of bed and slipped her arms into the robe.
Where is Mrs. Eby?
Making us some coffee.
Subayama looked at the furry yellow ball on Nishi's pillow.
A man's a lot more fun to sleep with than a cat, honey. And that Captain O'Hara sure has the hots for you.
But I do not want him.
You still think you can land Hansen, eh? Well, why not? A billionaire probably has more staying power than a damn Legion captain.
She turned and went out the door.
See you later, honey. I think maybe I'll give Lou's staying power another test.
When she was gone, Whitey stirred. Then,
big lady want lustful breeding dream. She's no dream, Whitey. She's a human just like me. Big lady human want lustful breeding dream,
Whitey insisted. Nishi chuckled.
I think she's lustful for a human, too. Big lady want lustful breed many humans. Big lady make lustful thinks bad man O'Hara. I'm sure you're right, Whitey. Lorna's what we call very oversexed.
Mrs. Eby appeared in the doorway with a steaming cup of coffee.
Who are you talking to, Miss Nishi?
I'm talking to myself, Mrs. Eby. Put the coffee on my nightstand.
You want me to lay out your clothes?
I'll take care of it. You get your breakfast and I'll talk to you later about Phoenicia Hansen. I want you to tell me everything you know about her.
Any special reason?
She's coming here to see me.
Lorna's story's got under her skin. Take her for all you can, Miss Nishi. Millions.
We'll see, Mrs. Eby. Run along now.
When she was gone, Whitey stirred on the bed. Eby lady make bad thinks Phoenicia. Eby lady make many thinks money. Why Eby lady make thinks money? Hearing someone in the hallway, Nishi composed her reply in a silent thought.
Mrs. Eby is getting old and afraid. She has no one to care for her.
Eby lady think Phoenicia Hansen very bad person.
She probably is a very bad person.
Whitey not let bad persons hurt Nishi. Whitey friend Nishi.
Nishi scooped up the furry yellow ball and hugged it.
I know you're my friend. Are you hungry, Whitey? What do you eat?
Whitey eat little air things. Take deep breath, eat. Not worry. Whitey never hungry.
The engagement of Mrs. Aoula Van Dyke to Lot Hansen, Jr. was announced in Spokane today by her parents, Mr. and Mrs. Percival S. Van Dyke. No wedding date has been set, but informed sources say the nuptials may occur in the White House, depending on the outcome of Mr. Hansen's bid for the presidency. From the Spokane Breeze. Lot, his shirt open to the navel, sat facing the closed door of his father's office in the MX complex. Excessive activity brought on by Phoenicia's orders made it hot in the complex this evening, almost as hot as at the Enquirer. Following his editorial policy on conservation, the newspaper's air conditioning had been shut off. Uncomfortable in his Enquirer office, sweat coursing down his chest and under his belt, Lott had fled to the complex, using the argument that he and Woon could meet secretly here. Woon waxed lyric about the hothouse effect in the Enquirer and had ordered pictures showing Lott at work under those steamy conditions.
All results show 61% in favor of your consistent agreement with the needs of the people, Woon said.
Screw the people, Lott thought. But the campaign was going well. Even Maury agreed. Whether on Phoenicia's orders or to mend his own fences, Maury no longer made snide remarks about my brother, the president.
Just let me get control of the Justice Department, Maury. I'll show you how justice is administered under my orders.
The call Lott cherished had come from Major Captain. She had reached him at the Enquirer the day his candidacy became public, and seeing Lott as a possible commander-in-chief, she had been brisk and businesslike.
In light of your new status, Mr. Hansen, I would like to offer, on my general's behalf, any facilities you may need from the Zone Patrol Regional Command. Of course, we will coordinate with the Secret Service for your protection, and should you require any further use of our facilities, please feel free to call us.
Lott thought he had used great restraint, not asking her if she wanted to bring him in for interrogation. She must also have nurtured thoughts about their previous meetings, because she said, "If I have caused any offense in the past, please blame zealous obedience to my oath of allegiance."
"Should I win this election, Major Captain, you may be sure the ZP will be the first to benefit."
He had thought that reply quite statesmanlike, and Woon had praised it.
"You're beginning to sound like a president, by God. Now let's whip a few asses over there and get you a proper official entourage."
The immediate result was 3 ZP squads, one in the Enquirer, one at the family compound, and one mobile to accompany him on campaign trips. Hanson guards and his mother objected, but Lutt had been all sweetness in response.
It's their duty to guard me. You can't be suggesting I ask these brave people to forsake their duty.
Lutt found it amusing to see guards and ZP tripping over one another, each trying to be first and each spying on him. The ZP, Lutt supposed, reported to Woon. Guards reported to Mother.
And I report only to Father's listening post.
Lutt looked around him at the office, all of it much as he had found it the night of his father's death. He thought he had uncovered most of the traps, but the listening post upstairs still daunted him. There was a pattern to the traps, Lutt thought, but he could not put it into words. Still, there was satisfaction in the fact neither Maury nor his mother dared join him here, even though Hanson guards waited outside right now with his mobile ZP squad. The guards flatly refused to enter LH's premises.
I believe I'm beginning to think like the old man. And that may be just the fatal mistake he expected.
The main computers still pulsed and reported from the tentacles of Hanson Industries, even though Phoenicia and Maury had tried to cut this office's connections to the company. But Lutt dared not put his own orders online. When his mother complained to Woon, the senator played a delaying game, asking for more time. From the first, Lutt had used this office as a retreat, leaving the impression with Maury and Woon that he was following their every move from here, just as his father had. They would test him, though, and the sham could be exposed.
Damn, Lutt thought as he looked up at the entrance to the escalator and the listening post.
Ryle, silent observer to most of Lutt's recent activities, saw the direction of his fleshmate's thoughts and protested.
No, Lutt, it's too dangerous.
If I can't use the listening post, I'm done for. I'll be another of Phoenicia's puppets, or even worse, Woon's puppet.
Lutt lifted himself from the chair and felt it shift beneath him. Instinctively, he dove to the floor. A barrage of darts hissed across him, spraying the area he had just vacated. He watched them slam into an armor glass window and shatter. Broken pieces of darts fell to the floor. A servobot sped from a nearby wall slot and scooped up the pieces.
Would it have scooped up the pieces of me, too?
Your father was a wild animal, Ryle protested. Stay out of his listening post.
Not on your life, Ryle, baby. It's him or me now. No dead man's going to defeat me.
Taking his father's control cane, Lutt crossed the narrow lane to the escalator and set it running. Up the steps with their grisly warning he went, attention on the walls around him, the landing, the narrow passage to the post itself.
The old man could have set other traps like that, Sharon, that didn't go off the first time.
Lutt, please go back, Ryle pleaded.
Just as dangerous to go back as to go ahead. Maybe even more dangerous to go back without solving this place. Stop distracting me. That itself could kill us.
Lutt paused outside the listening post and examined the door jamb. No apparent traps in it, but there had been nothing to reveal the chair's secret either. He touched a key on the cane and stepped aside, but the door opened without incident. Slowly, leaning on the cane the way his father had, Lutt crossed the threshold. Here it was. The innermost key to his father's soul. And the dome holding the final words for Maury remained intact, the folder visible inside. Lutt stared at the wall modules, their oddly configured graphics and LEDs all around him. He recalled his father working on a module during that last visit here. Yes, there was the unit. Lutt remembered counting up from the floor and out from the nearest corner to mark the thing's placement. Why did I do that? Had it been something about his father's actions that day? Was there a clue in what his father had done? Maybe he was trying to show me something, testing me to see if I would notice. Lutt looked at the transparent dome where his final words had reposed. The dome lay tipped back on its hinges, and for the first time Lutt noticed an almost microscopic red wire under the seal.
He leaned close and inspected it, following it around and down the supporting stand. Into a grout line of the tiled floor it went, across the floor, up the modular wall, and, yes, into the unit his father had removed and replaced. Was the red wire what it seemed to be? Lutt pondered this.
The listening post is now yours, all yours and yours alone.
His father's final words.
No, Lutt,
Ryle pleaded as he read the thought forming in Lutt's mind.
Your father was devious and treacherous.
He was also dying, and he knew it.
You can't trust him. It's too much of a gamble.
Lutt did not reply. He put a hand on the module his father had replaced. With one swift pull, he removed the unit from the wall and looked at it. Reversible. He rotated the module and plugged it back into the wall.
Up here, Lutt.
His father's voice.
Lutt looked up. The ceiling had become a screen, and there was his father, seated at the main computers in the outer office.
Pretty good recording, eh?
The seated figure asked.
Answer if you want, but I'm not really here for one of our old conversations. Those were pretty boring anyway.
The figure looked directly down at him from the screen, the prosthetic eyes like antennae protruding from his head.
That took guts to trust me. But I presume you saw the red wire and recognized it as one of my simple go-no-go breaker links. You still couldn't be certain, though.
Laughter shook the figure in the screen.
You old bastard, Lutt said. You're dead and still playing your games with me.
No sense cussing me out,
the recorded figure said.
Oh, I know you pretty well, son. I've studied you a long time. You won't let Maury or your mother into these offices, but they've tried to disconnect my control and communication systems. Typical.
Again, laughter shook the figure in the screen.
What game are you playing this time? Lutt muttered.
The only one who can break these connections is probably your Uncle Dudley,
L.H. said.
I don't think he'd do that, but you shouldn't count on it. Dud always was unpredictable.
A fit of coughing interrupted the recital. When it passed, the old man pointed down at Lutt.
This post is yours, son. But it's not going to do you a damn bit of good, unless you use it the way it ought to be used. You gotta be ruthless.
Still testing me, Lutt whispered.
The listening post's controls are beneath where I put my final words for you,
L.H. said.
Once you got my note, all the little traps except the one under my final note to Maury were disarmed. He's the only one can get his words, but you'll never let him do that. You'll worry about what I said to him, though, and you'll cuss me every time you think about it. That's a sharp spine I've stuck in your side, so's you'll never forget my advice. Be as ruthless as I was, son. That's the way to win.
Again, coughing interrupted the old voice. L.H. spoke weakly when he resumed, but Lutt did not trust the appearance.
I think your mother's done something to my medicine. No matter. I could not have lasted much longer anyway. But she always was impatient. That's why I married her. Never liked her fancy ways, but she's tough. I thought she'd give me tough children.
A bony old hand came up and waved at Lutt.
Bye-bye, Lutt. I'm gone for good now. Think you can live up to my expectations?
The ceiling screen went blank. Lutt touched the stand where his note had been. Cold. He pressed the flat surface. Nothing. The red wire? He slipped a fingernail under it and pulled. The stand opened like a shell, and there lay a familiar array of CRT screen and keyboard, another screen and VidCom under them. Lutt's fingers danced over the search circuit keys, spelling out Maury's name, voice only. Maury's faceless voice came from the speaker under the CRT.
I tell you, Gil, I think he's bluffing. I don't think he can spy on us at all.
You may be right, but what if you're wrong?
A recording? Or something happening right now? Lutt lifted the VidCom handset and keyed Maury's name. Lights blinked on the walls as the listening post circuits searched out his brother's location. A buzzing sounded.
"Wonder who that is?" Maury asked.
There was a click.
"I thought I said we were not to be interrupted."
"I'll interrupt you any time I want,"
Lutt said. There was a gasp from the speaker.
"Where are you? I'm getting no picture."
"This is the picture I want you to get, Maury,"
Lutt said.
"I'm not bluffing. Woon, get your ass in gear and stay away from my brother, or I'll blow you out of the water. Got that?" "Yes, sir, Mr. Hansen."
Lutt pitched his voice in a low, soothing tone.
"Maury, would you see to it that Mother causes me as little trouble as possible? That way you can continue enjoying your life. Oh, just in case you get violent, everything I know about you will become public if I'm not around to prevent it."
Everything. Lutt broke the connection and started to replace the handset, but paused at another thought. Was it possible? He keyed Phoenicia's name. Nothing happened. What had his father called her in private? A pet name was out of character. He might have used a code name. L.H. had thought of her as Tough. Lutt keyed, Tough. Still nothing. Fancy? No response to that either. Lutt sat back and racked his memory. Never trust women was too long. Woman? Lutt tried it, and heard his mother's voice. "Lutt will come around when I squeeze him hard enough."
A recording?
Did he dare reveal he could spy on her? Who was she talking to, and where were they? At home? He keyed the main house number on the handset, and there was his mother's study, visible on the screen, with Phoenicia seated behind her ornate antique desk. Her companion was not visible.
"Oh, there you are, Mother," he said. "Who's with you?"
"How nice of you to call, Lutt," Phoenicia said. "Are you calling from a safe VidCom?"
"Nobody taps Father's offices."
"So that's where you are. I must discuss that with you. It seems to me that Maury..."
"Maury stays out of my campaign and out of these offices."
"I don't like that tone, Lutt."
"Maury's been meeting with Gill, and I don't have any idea who knows it."
He touched the query key on a handset, and the screen spelled out a name and title of Phoenicia's companion. Barbara Morrison, Senator Woon's administrative assistant.
"I'm calling you, Mother, because I'm told you are meeting Barbara Morrison, Gill's administrative assistant. Is that who's with you?"
Phoenicia's tone dripped ice.
"Why are you interested in my meeting Barbara?"
"Our connection with Woon must be kept secret until we're ready to announce it."
"I'm quite capable of conducting clandestine meetings."
"But I learned about it."
"How?"
Her tone was imperative.
"I will not tell you."
"You're as bad as your father."
"I could be worse. What are you and Barbara discussing?"
"She says your campaign is going very well. Are you really refusing to debate your opponents?"
"I am."
"Is that wise?"
"There won't be any need for debate when we spring Denny Ra."
"But debates would give you such a splendid opportunity to show your statesmanlike character."
"Who says?"
"I will not be questioned like this."
"I mean to win this election, Mother. You're meeting with Ms. Morrison. That could cause problems."
Phoenicia spoke coldly.
"For your information, we have been discussing that very question."
"That's interesting. What have you decided?"
"The senator must announce his support of your candidacy soon. He will bring many AIP supporters with him. The American Independence Party will object, of course, but the strategy of our campaign must take into account the votes Senator Woon controls."
"Ms. Morrison?"
The screen blurred, then showed both women in profile. "That's a fancy touch," Lutt thought. Miss Morrison was a brunette with pinched face and half glasses that added to her look of sexless office functionary. She faced the lens.
Yes.
One moment, Lutz said. He keyed her name on the spy circuits and asked for a summary. Across the upper screen paraded a brief account, birthplace, schooling, advancements, then AIP agent in office of Senator Gilberton Woon. Reports regularly to AIP Council. She looked up into her eyes.
It has come to my attention, Miss Morrison, that you are an AIP spy in Gil's office.
She gasped.
Lot, what are you talking about?
Phoenicia demanded.
Be patient, Mother.
Lot keyed the spy circuits for damaging information and read the new data with growing elation.
Your little house in Virginia and what you do there are all known to me, Miss Morrison, Lutz said. I also know about your deal with the French ambassador. It's dangerous to play both sides of the street, didn't you know that?
She had a palm on each cheek and was glaring at Lutz with a stricken expression.
Now here's what you'll do, Miss Morrison, Lutz said. You will tell the AIP Council Gil has had a change of heart. He intends to betray me. You can do that, can't you?
She nodded without taking her hands from her cheeks.
You will say the stories about an alien captive have proved untrue. There is no such captive, got that?
Again she nodded.
And you will report to me daily for instructions on what to tell the AIP Council and the French ambassador. Understood?
Her voice was barely a whisper.
Yes.
Now leave my mother's house and make sure you're not seen.
Just a minute,
Phoenicia objected. Barbara Morrison wavered.
Get out,
Lutz ordered. The administrative assistant fled. Lutz looked at his mother.
Your political naivete has almost ruined my campaign, Mother. She was going to set me up at a debate, make me look ridiculous.
Lutz, I swear I didn't know.
Of course you didn't know. So from now on, you make no political decisions at all without consulting me.
She bridled.
I do have some intelligence, Lutz. And I am still your mother.
But you're not my campaign director.
Yes, Lutz.
Lutz recalled hearing her use that precise tone with his father. It did not fool him.
You'll regret it if you cross me, Lutz said.
Are you threatening me?
I see I've made myself clear.
But I'm your mother.
So act like one.
I can't believe I'm hearing this.
There's another thing, Mother. I want you to increase the budget for Sam Cand at my shop.
Her back stiffened.
That's a financial matter.
Maury and I have decided underside, Mother. Your fancy friends would really enjoy hearing about how you almost messed up my political future.
You destroy your campaign just to hurt me?
Don't test it, Mother. I don't want these petty things distracting me when it comes time to revitalize the GOP.
He broke the connection and looked up at the ceiling.
Was that ruthless enough for you, Father?
Madame Hansen will be taken to the island from Marseille in a sealed helicopter, unable to see out. Be certain she is not armed. She will be guarded at all times en route. If the meetings with Mademoiselle D'Amato are private, all conversations between the two must be recorded secretly.
Special Order, OE-B No. 30, French Foreign Legion. Nishi remained at the window for several minutes after the messenger's departure. Lunch sat heavily on her stomach. So, Phoenicia was arriving within the hour.
Was it wrong to say Lorna could not be at my meeting with Phoenicia?
A sound behind her brought her around. Servobots were cleaning, dusting, and arranging the reception room. One of the bots, Whitey informed her, was a spy device. Once more she faced the sea. A sharp wind rippled the waters. It was a cold, late fall day. She had not expected it to be chilly on the Mediterranean. Nishi shivered.
Or is it just apprehension about this meeting?
Whitey, on a settee nearby, rippled its yellow fur.
Nishi not worry. Whitey help.
I know your help, White He. I just can't understand why Phoenicia would come in person.
Soon learn. She looked fondly at her pet.
No, much more than a pet.
Since YT's arrival, life had become smoother and more interesting. The creature reported not only the thoughts of her personal associates, but also those of anyone who came within range. What would Phoenicia Hansen's thoughts reveal?
The entire Hansen family is unpredictable, she decided. Why didn't Lot come? Is he angry because of Lorna's stories? But he hasn't even tried to send word, and it's been 3 months. Of course, there's his political campaign, but all those stories about his plans to marry Eora van Dijk, surely he won't go through with it.
Need she not worry? She felt a wash of soothing sympathy from Whitey, and tried to relax.
Not my man of two worlds, dream and human, private and political. Why is he seeking such exalted office?
Nishi learns soon,
Whitey offered.
And what is happening to poor Ryle?
Ryle Dreen. Dreen, friend, Whitey responded. From her window, she could see two of the Legion's gun batteries, turreted gray mounds with long barrels protruding, all framed against a background of evergreens.
Weapons everywhere.
Even Lorna had brought a weapon, an antique she called my equalizer. The Legion thought it a joke. Nishi sighed. The 90-day wonder of Lorna's articles had passed, and the publishers clamored for new revelations. They even wanted a book. Lorna spoke of very large offers.
They'll pay millions, honey.
Phoenicia comes because she fears a book's revelations. What will she do if I say Lot breaches the promise to me?
That had been Lorna's idea, one eagerly taken up by Mrs. Eby. Trust Mrs. Eby to focus on the money.
Well, why not? What else do I have? And my life is my own concern. Lot certainly appears to have no worries about me.
Nishi fos budget, YT quipped. YT had dredged the term from someone's mind and used it now whenever she needed joking out of her apprehensions. Nishi smiled, then frowned. The mystery of YT did not concern her deeply, but she occasionally wondered if the creature might be having a secret influence on her. There were oddities. Everyone thought YT was a cat. Even O'Hara had come to that idea and apologized to her for unseemly behavior, blaming too much of the drink. But no one investigated her pet. Could YT prevent curiosity?
YT Nishi, friend,
YT offered. She felt a soothing wash of the creature's concern and shook her head. Worries did her no good. Her gaze went to the horizon.
Was that faraway dot the chopper bringing Phoenicia Hansen?
The dot grew larger with alarming rapidity and resolved into a Legion copter. She heard the engine and rotors.
Is it the one?
Sometimes other choppers came, some with officials to tell her about conditions on Venus and urge actions to gain Lot's communicators. Because of YT, she knew it was not just communicators the Legion desired. They sought bigger game. The Legion wanted Lot's spiral technology with its space travel advantages. But 3 months now and she was losing patience with both Legion and Lot. And where was Raj Dude's promised help?
I should never have pledged my honor not to escape.
The Legion's regional prefect was almost reason enough to defy her code of honor. An oily fat man with a black toupee, he spoke only in unctuous tones.
We must not arouse the curiosity of the enemy. You are a woman wronged and have a natural interest in this man, Hansen.
The prefect's lack of candor angered her.
Do the Chinese not see reports of Monsieur Hansen's news service?
She asked.
Naturally. But they show no dangerous curiosity.
And the prefect said not one word about the wires she had sent to Lot, all of them unanswered.
What more should she do? Go crawling to Lot on her knees? Not even for the Legion.
She wanted no more of the prefect's platitudes.
The Yankees always try to get the most out of us,
he said.
Squeeze these Hansons, little one.
Our agents say the stories of Madame Subiyama bring the perspiration to his brow.
So the Legion used blackmail instead of money. Where was the honor in that? It was inexcusable, even if things were bad in Paris and very bad on Venus. And was it honorable for them to play this game while their little one rotted in a stupid villa? I have done enough, she thought. I no longer am content to be a prisoner, even of the Legion.
The arriving helicopter swung wide over the villa and came down on the small field north of her where, according to local stories, the Roman Emperor Trajan once had practiced his horsemanship. It gave her an odd link with history, Nishi thought. She and Lorna used the place for target practice with the antique pistol that had belonged to Subiyama's grandfather. Although the Legion thought the ancient gun amusing and not very dangerous, they made Subiyama take it out only under supervision. Nishi watched a woman in a well-fitted gray suit emerge from the chopper and dodge under the rotors. The woman glanced at the villa, and Nishi recognized Phoenicia Hansen. An officer accompanying her held her arm and brought her to a stop outside the danger zone. They conversed there, the words unintelligible in the chopper's noise. The officer gesticulated and said something vehement, but Phoenicia shook her head.
Nishi.
It was Whitey with something urgent.
What is it, Whitey?
Phoenicia, lady, brings poison thing to kill you.
Nishi shot a glance at Whitey, then out the window where Phoenicia still argued with a Legion officer.
Are you sure?
Whitey, sure.
But how could she do it and not be caught?
Poison take 3 days. Make no noise. You not feel poison thing. Guardmen not find.
Damn her!
Abruptly, Nishi dashed out of the room, up the stairs, and into the Lorna's quarters. Subiyama, in a billowing magenta housecoat, sat reading a book on her bed. Nishi was not fooled by this apparent agreement with her orders to stay away from Phoenicia. Subiyama intended to sneak downstairs and spy on the meeting the minute Nishi was involved in the reception room.
You changed your mind, Subiyama said. You want me there when the Hansen dame talks to you.
No. Where is your weapon?
My weapon? You mean Grandpa's hog leg?
The gun we shoot.
Why in hell you want that thing? You gonna have a shootout with old Lady Hansen?
Nishi held out a hand.
Give me the revolver, please.
Okay, honey. But this better be good copy.
Subiyama fished under her mattress and brought out the antique pistol, a stainless steel .357 Magnum with fitted grips. Nishi grabbed it from her.
Now you be careful with that thing, Subiyama warned. Remember, it has a hair trigger.
The revolver felt heavy and deadly in Nishi's hand, and she almost rejected it.
But I must protect myself. Is it ready for shooting?
She asked.
It's fully loaded. Now tell me what's going on.
Come down. You may listen outside the door.
Subiyama picked up a small recording camera and heaved her bulk out of the bed.
I knew you'd change your mind.
Without pausing to see if Subiyama followed, Nishi dashed out of the room and down the stairs. In the reception room, she pulled a small table from against the wall, placed a chair behind it, and seated herself with a revolver hidden in her lap. The door from the porch stood open in front of her, and she could hear footsteps growing louder there. Whitey remained a curled-up ball of yellow on a nearby settee.
Poison thing in purse handle,
Whitey informed her.
Nishi want Whitey hurt bad lady head?
Don't frighten her off. We must learn what's in her mind.
Whitey tell Nishi.
Phoenicia, clutching a purse to match her gray suit, entered the open door and paused for her eyes to adjust to the room's shadows. An older officer Nishi had seen several times with the prefect came in beside Phoenicia and also stopped. He squinted at Nishi.
Oh, there you are, mademoiselle.
Leave us,
Nishi ordered.
I will be nearby if you call, mademoiselle, he said, and bowed before leaving.
The nerve of those people,
Phoenicia said.
They made me come alone. Wouldn't even let me bring my secretary.
She moved into the room, turning the purse slightly until the handle was almost aligned with Nishi.
Warning,
Whitey said.
Bad lady, waits man, be away.
Nishi cocked the revolver and brought it up, pointing it at Venetia.
If you turn that device any more in my direction, I will kill you, she said.
Venetia froze. They stared at each other, weighing the situation. Nishi alert for movement of the purse, Venetia seeking anything she might turn to advantage. Nishi noted the hardness in Venetia's pale blue eyes, the set and practiced strength of the woman's face. Nishi's lips felt dry, but she refused to moisten them, lest that reveal her fear. Venetia did not try to deny her intentions.
How did you know?
She asked.
I have my sources,
Nishi said.
Drop the purse.
Venetia opened her hands, and the purse clattered to the floor. The impact fired the dart mechanism. There was not even a hiss, but a faint click sounded as a projectile hit a wooden, weeping virgin statue beside the door to the library.
Now what?
Venetia asked.
I am thinking,
Nishi said.
You know, do you not, the Legion still employs the guillotine for offenses against the state?
Venetia paled.
You can't be serious.
I think my lot would be well rid of you,
Nishi said.
Don't you realize who I am?
Venetia demanded, but she rubbed her neck.
Bad lady, think cut off head, Whitey offered.
Why did she think she had to kill me?
Whitey transmitted a flood of information that almost made Nishi dizzy.
Lot son want lustful breeding Nishi. Lot son want... Bad lady want Lot son make lustful breeding Aeola lady. Want Lot son president.
What means president?
Oh, Subayama make bad story Lot son. Maybe make Lot son not president.
Was that enough for her to want me dead?
Bad lady want hurt Lot son. Want Lot son afraid.
Venetia shifted her weight to her left foot, and Nishi, fearing there might be another weapon, raised the revolver slightly.
Make no sudden movements,
Nishi said.
This weapon has the triggered hair.
Nishi chewed her lower lip, knowing she had said it incorrectly. It always happened when she went beyond her nervous tolerances.
No more poison things,
Whitey said.
There must be something you want enough that we can bargain,
Venetia said.
Your son?
You surprise me, Mr. Motto.
You do not surprise me, Venetia.
Venetia's lips went thin at the familiarity, but she said nothing.
Bad lady worry Lot son too much drunk, Whitey said. Bad lady blame Nishi.
Do you think it's my fault Lot has been drinking so much lately?
Nishi asked.
You're part of it. There's also the recent death of his father.
And I'm interfering with your plans.
My son must learn mature behavior,
Venetia said.
He must follow the path I have laid out for him.
And marry this Viola van Dyck?
He must marry within his social class. I'm sure you can understand that. You French are perfectly aware of social necessities.
Bad lady think Nishi want much money. Whitey offered.
You still think you can buy me off?
Nishi said.
Everyone has a price,
Venetia said.
It could have been so much cheaper to kill me. Is that not so?
Nishi asked.
I'm a businesswoman, Mr. Motto.
And you think in centimes and francs. And I am a whore who can be paid for her troubles. You could return to Lot and tell him you bought me off.
For his own good.
A mother-dominated, shattered little boy, unable to live his own life. I don't think I want such a man.
Then what do you want?
I want the secret of Lot's spiral communication system, and one of his spaceships, fully operational.
You want what?
You heard correctly. In a few minutes, I will summon my Legion protectors. They would come anyway, because I'm sure they listen to all conversations in this villa. They will study your purse and the mechanism in it.
You think they'll really bring a charge against me?
Phoenicia asked, but there was little force in her voice.
They will hold you for an offense against the state. Your son will be told the price of your life. Do you think he will pay?
Phoenicia rubbed her neck and spoke in a weak voice.
Don't be melodramatic, young woman.
Bad lady think Lot son not save her,
Whitey said.
You doubt your son,
Nishi said.
He may not come to your rescue, as the Legion came for me.
They won't dare hold the mother of the next president.
What if I make it impossible for him to be elected?
Nishi asked.
As the mother of a loser, how would you then be different from any other criminal assassin?
Phoenicia opened her mouth and closed it without a sound. Bad lady think many hurts Nishi, Whitey offered. Nishi not safe. Bad lady do many thinks Lot son. You want bad lady thinks?
Can he?
Nishi ordered. Obviously, conversation had brought an outpouring of Phoenicia's thoughts about Lot. Whitey, with limited vocabulary, was almost at a loss conveying them to Nishi. Bad lady make hates dead father. Now make hates Lot son. He make hurts her. Maybe he cause head cut off. Lot son tell bad lady she not do politics. He make lustful breeding many womans. He not tell truths. Lot son make hurts Mori brother. Lot son bad man.
Enough,
Nishi ordered. She took a deep, shuddering breath. She had suspected the extent of evil Lot had absorbed from his awful family, but there was no doubting it in the face of Whitey's revelations.
I know Lot, she said. His threats are to be believed.
A red flush spread from Phoenicia's neck to her face. Nishi pointed the revolver to the right and touched the trigger. The roar of the shot filled the room, and the bullet smashed into the stucco wall, dropping plaster onto the tiles. The officer who had brought Phoenicia was in the room before Nishi could count two. He was followed immediately by a squad of her regular guards under Captain O'Hara. Phoenicia cowered with both hands over her mouth. Nishi gestured with a revolver.
There's the purse with the device she intended to kill me. The poison dart went into the statue of the Virgin over there. I wish to see the regional prefect.
As soon as she can be brought, mademoiselle, O'Hara said.
He took a firm grip on Phoenicia's right arm.
You were very astute, Mademoiselle D'Amato, to take advantage of the situation. I'm sure we will get everything we require now.
I'm not sure of it,
Nishi said.
Lot may let you kill her if you don't handle this correctly.
Subayama lumbered up beside Nishi, holding the tiny camera. She gave a low whistle.
Got it all, honey. You thinking what I'm thinking?
Lot will never lose if he can prevent it,
Nishi said.
We must make no mistakes about what he will do to win.
And she wondered how much pressure she could put on him. Reveal that a dream shared his body? No, that would put Ryle in jeopardy. She knew she could not do that, especially since the Raj Dude had charged her with protecting the dream. But Lot need not know her reservations.
Ryle, Dreen. Whitey offered. Help, Dreen.
If you have the Queen Bee, you have him, Subayama said.
Nishi sighed. So even Subayama did not understand Lot.
Is mother a common assassin?
Subayama crowed.
Oh, no, he can't let that come out. It would kill his election.
He must be made to see the full picture,
Nishi said.
Where is Mrs. Eby? I wish her to carry an ultimatum to my former fiancé.
You're giving up on him?
Subayama asked.
I do not wish to ally myself with such a family,
Nishi said.
It is unfortunate, because I would have made the perfect wife for the poor man.
It is with extreme regret that I sever my long relationship with the American Independence Party. At the same time, I consider myself fortunate, and I must say I am proud, to declare my support for Lot Hansen, Jr., and the platform of the Grand Old Party. Recent developments have left me no choice. The AIP, once the strong guardian of human rights, has become a callous tool of the rich. We are fortunate that the GOP is here to pick up the sacred torch.
Gilbert and Woon, formal announcement.
I won't let you threaten Dreener, Ryle insisted. If your warlike stance were only a political trick, I'd tolerate it. But when you suggest mounting an attack on my sacred homeland...
Drop it, you Dreen idiot. I'll fight the French or the Dreens. I'll do any damn thing I want, and you can't stop me.
Lutt stood near the windows of his father's old offices in the MX complex, a wet wad of basil in his left hand. He hated the idea of chewing and swallowing the basil, and had been nerving himself for it all morning. The herb always made him feel almost drunk. But the just-concluded session with the French ambassador tipped the scales toward basil.
"This is my lunch, Ryle, baby," he gloated,
hefting the herb. Ryle contemplated the Bazile with loathing and longing. How pleasant to drift in a Bazile haze, no worries, no arguments with his fleshmate. But Lutt tolerated the dreadful drug, even though he became belligerent and his mind lost its sharp edge. He stumbled a great deal, too. But there could be no doubt who ruled their body when it was saturated with Bazile.
"You need me alert and able to advise you," Ryle argued as Lutt lifted the Bazile toward their mouth.
"Advise me about what, Ryle, baby?"
Lutt bit off a mouthful of the herb and swallowed.
"You make many mistakes,"
Ryle pleaded.
"Like what?"
"The ZP plays its own game when it keeps your secret about Denny Ra. It was an error allowing your brother to arrange this, and your decision to abandon your mother is wrong."
"Mother made her own bed. And Maury, I want to scare the shit out of him." Already there was a slight blurring of Lutt's mind, but elation drove him. "You know what'll scare him most? The idea of me as president."
"But the ZP and Denny Ra are dangerous, I tell you."
Ryle felt his mind blurring faster than Lutz.
"Maury can't plot anything with anybody without me knowing. My listening post catches everything. Besides, Denny Ra's guards will tell me what they talk about."
"Woon's coming, and he'll think you're drunk."
"So what?"
Desperate, Ryle tried once more what no other Dreen had ever done, to image block the Bazile. As usual, he failed. Lutt, sensing the attempt and Ryle's fading mental strength, began to laugh. The laughter enraged Ryle. He felt himself withdrawing into Bazile ecstasy. Through a drug-induced mist, he saw Woon enter the office and come up the stairs to Lutt's level.
"My level."
It was a useless thought. In a Bazile hallucination, the senator appeared to expand like a balloon and contract into a miniature figure. Ryle thought this funny, and tried to share the joke. Lutt ignored the intrusion and took a seat near the windows where he concentrated on the visitor. Their conversation came to Ryle filtered with Bazile distortions, sometimes low, then echoing, now loud, remote, near, clear, fuzzed. But Ryle was unable to block it out and retreat into private thoughts.
"The AIP is offering that whore, Taloma, big bucks to speak out against you. Is it true you had a fight with her?"
Woon, first loud and then whispering.
"I got drunk and had a crying jag. The bitch had the nerve to say I was supposed to be bawling, not bawling."
That was Lutt. Ryle wished he could giggle.
"What?"
Woon again. Lutt spelled it for the senator, who seemed to shout,
"Taloma says you were crying about someone named Nini. The word in the back alleys is you told her you didn't take advice from a whore. So what if I did? Where does she get off telling me I'd been coming to the wrong place all these years if I was looking for a prom date?" "You have to be more careful, Lutt. It's going to cost us plenty buying her off. Are you drunk right now?"
"Hell no."
"Your head's shaking kind of strangely, fella." "I'm not your fella, Woon. I'm your candidate for president." "Damn it, you've been drinking. And it's barely noon. What I drink and when is none of your business. Just as long as you don't appear in public this way." Lut leaned forward belligerently. Are you trying to tell me what to do? I am your campaign manager, Lut.
You're my figurehead, Woon. That's what you are?
A surge of rage distorted the senator's fat cheeks and vanished immediately. He smiled.
I'll try to remember that, Mr. Hansen. Well, what did you want to see me about? That guru on Venus, the Raj dude, called me out of the blue this morning. He wanted to talk about some agreement you're supposed to be making with the French Foreign Legion. What the hell are you doing with the Legion?
Yeah, Uncle Dudley did say something about carrying on with the negotiations. Tell him to stop it.
Uncle Dudley? You mean the Raj dude is
my mother's brother.
Jesus H. Willie. If that ever gets out. Can you keep a lid on him? Does he want money? For Uncle Dude doesn't seem to care about money. I think he and old Osceola are a nesting pair.
The spirit glass lady? That Osceola?
None other.
Woon found a chair and sank into it. Lut was amused that Woon chose a chair L.H. once had booby-trapped to goose whoever sat in it.
Cheryl left it the way Father had it. Do you have any other little surprises for me?
Woon asked.
Yeah. It may be all over the media soon anyway. The French ambassador's been here. He says my dear old mama tried to assassinate Nishi D'Amato. The ambassador called Nishi the Legion's mascot and said this is a crime against the state.
Lut drew a finger across his throat.
Oh, my God,
Woon gasped.
There's a bright side, Lut said. We won't have Mama to kick around anymore.
You can joke about it.
Why not? Think of the mileage we'll get out of this.
We deny the charges. My mother would never do such a thing. They chop her, and we go into mourning.
A sympathy vote would give me a landslide victory.
Your own mother? You're not serious.
Is there anything wrong with my analysis?
I don't give a damn about your fucking analysis.
Hey! Aren't you a campaign manager?
Okay. Then you better know, this is the kind of thing that can backfire and ruin us. The opposition would suggest you might use the presidency to revenge yourself on the French.
Yeah. I might.
Have you gone mad?
I'm gonna win this election, Woon. And when I do, I'll show you a thing or three about using power.
Will the French bargain with us to cool this thing?
Woon asked.
They say my former housekeeper, remember Mrs. Eby? They say she's coming with a message from Nishi. I may bargain with her if Nishi is willing to put out for me.
Put out?
Christ's sakes, don't you speak English?
I'm afraid I do. Are you suggesting you would bargain for your mother's life if this Nishi will jump into bed with you?
You got it.
End of side 9. To continue, turn the cassette over.